so many places in my life and time. All right, we're back. Thanks for tuning in. You are listening to the Drew Marshall Show. We're streaming live at drewmarshall.ca. We're on the My Joy Radio app and iTunes or Google Play and across the GTA on AM 1250 Joy Radio. A while ago, I decided, a long time ago actually, decided I wanted to do these things called journey segments. Because every time I went to a church, they would have someone on stage who would say, well, I used to do this, and then I found Jesus, and now everything's peachy. And it's just not always the case. It seems like if you're part of the God scene, that your life should just be squeaky clean and perfect. And we all know that that's not the truth. I'm far more interested in people's journey within their sort of spiritual context. Rather than tying a bow on everything and having it, oh, ta-da, there, it's all done. So people's stories fascinate me, bottom line. Because I probably just should have said that. People's stories fascinate me. On February 7, 2016, Mandy Bass suffered a brutal attack on her life when a college senior named Kevin broke into her home in a drug-induced rage and nearly beat her to death. In her book, Taming the Tokolosh, there you go, yeah, I said that, through fear into healing, a trauma survivor's true story. You tell I'm near the end of the show. Mandy shares details of the attack and her journey through healing, both for herself and the man who attacked her. Listen to this. I came to forgiveness by imagining how Kevin's parents felt and seeing him through the eyes of love, capital L. Just like a mother looks at their child and can distinguish between their inherent goodness and their behavior, so was I able to see Kevin, with God's help, of course. Today, Kevin has me as Mama Mandy in his phone, and I see Kevin as the child I never had. Here's a website for you to check out. It's mindtosucceed.com. And Mandy and Kevin, join us on The Drew Marshall Show. Kevin, I want to go right to you, sort of right off the bat for a second.
Okay.
In these interviews, you know, like we just had a couple on the show a little while ago, and the wife said, well, you know, one of the issues we've had to process is when my husband decided to step outside our marriage and had an affair. And I looked at the husband and I went, oh, dude, she just threw you under the bus, right? It was sort of that feeling. And in your story, I mean, you're the guy that did the bad stuff. What are you sort of secretly screaming out loud to the world? Like, I can imagine you going, hold on. I'm not that bad. Kevin?
Well, I'm not really screaming at anyone. It's just I'm at the end of the day, I'm blessed for what happened. And I was always brought up with, you can't worry about what other people are going to think about you, and you have to live your life, be the best person you can. That's how my father raised me. That's how my family brought me up. So all I really think about is, I know what I've done. I was the Eagle Scout. I was the firefighter. I had a 4.0 in high school. I went to college, and I made this one mistake that changed everything. And a lot of people make mistakes. So I just had to be secure in myself and know that I'm a good person and know that this was completely out of character. And Mandy, her giving me that love and that forgiveness, that's really all I need. So there's no reason for me to scream, because at the end of the day, Mandy really does the screaming for me.
Wow, that was an amazing way to start off this interview. That was well said, Kevin. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Mandy, I mean, he just nailed it on the head. I mean, you could have easily, like most people we sort of imagine, you could have easily gone down the road of bitterness and unforgiveness, and you did this, and you know, how dare you, and you should be locked up forever, and all that kind of stuff. How come you didn't?
Well, I mean, to be totally honest, you know, in the beginning, when after I was attacked, and I was experiencing sort of, you know, severe physical and emotional trauma, and going through my healing process, I did go through a time when I was feeling really angry and resentful and, you know, all those feelings that you would expect someone to have when they've had just something come in and just totally turn their life upside down. So I did go through those feelings initially, but I came to a place in my own journey where I realized that if I didn't change the way I was thinking, that I was in danger of becoming a bitter and angry person for the rest of my life. Like, I was in danger of becoming that person that I always said I would never become. Mm-hmm. And I realized that if I wanted my life to be different, I was going to need to start thinking differently. I was going to need to start healing, and, you know, I knew that forgiveness was a very big aspect of it, you know, as far as that was concerned. So really, in the beginning, changing how I was thinking about things was really for my own survival, for my own happiness at that point, you know?
Well, I think this is what we all do as people. We put ourselves in your shoes. So, you know, Kevin, we would put ourselves in your shoes, and we would say, oh, man, yeah, I mean, we've all made at least one serious dumb choice in our life. But this one turned you into a psychotic maniac.
Absolutely.
So, you know, that whole phrase, yet by the grace of God go I, kind of a thing. And then, Mandy, you know, again, we put ourselves in your shoes and go, man, like, how do you get over something like that? How do you not turn into a paranoid, lock the door, lock the windows, put boards up? I don't know. You know, how does paranoia and bitterness not take over? So I want to ask you individually about your God stories because, you know, just – hold on. How do I say this? Just because – you've arrived, it sounds like, on the healthy side of this story, doesn't necessarily mean that the God stuff played a role in that. So I'll ask you directly, Kevin, what did God stuff play a role in you coming on out of the darkness and into the light of this story?
I mean, absolutely, 100%. Being raised, and my dad and my mom, I went to church every Sunday. I played the trumpet for the church. So I've always had a very conscious awareness of God and that there's some power and control of everything and the stories my father's told me. But I decided to let myself be an instrument of God, to just walk in faith and let the Holy Spirit run through you. And that's how I, like I said before, be the best person you can be. Just let God work through you because God is love. So when I was in this, after the attack happened and I assaulted Mandy and she left the house and I was kind of coming to because there was not many noise and distractions, I kind of was processing everything. And I decided, that's when I decided to write Don't Use LSD. And I really thought I was going to die. I thought I was about to meet God. And I knelt in, I think a couple weeks before, my mom had messaged me some scripture and it said, be still. And I looked at it and I said, be still. That's a concept. So I don't know why or what came to. I think the Holy Spirit just told me to pray, be still. And I didn't know whether I was going to die right then, which I thought I was likely going to do, was going to die. Or if I knew that if I'm saved, this is some divine nature because people in my situation right then at that moment, they don't make it out alive. It just logically, there would be no way. So God has definitely pulled me up out of the thorns and has taken me and has done great things with where I'm at now. I look back in retrospect and I can't believe that I'm breathing. Not even that I'm working. I have my own apartment. I'm 24 years old, healthy. My parents are, everyone's doing well. Mandy's doing well. This, it has to be structured. It's like a puzzle that can, it's a million pieces. And it unless there is a designer, it would not work.
So you guys are both so well spoken. You must have done. Have you done a lot of media, Mandy?
Well, we were on the Today Show together, Kevin and I, with Megyn Kelly, and and I do you know quite a bit of interviews. Before this ever happened, I do a lot of speaking. I have a training and coaching business that I've had for 20 years, and so I do a lot of speaking to groups and. Just so happens that Kevin just happens to be a very charismatic and great communicator, which, of course, I didn't know at the time. But
no. Yeah, you didn't quite pick up on that the night you guys first met? No.
No, not at all.
Mandy, what's been your spiritual journey throughout this?
So, you know, I've always been a very deeply spiritual person, but after this attack, I have to tell you, I really lost my faith. You know, I went through a very, very dark time, and you know, because I do work for myself, it wasn't just, you know, the physical and emotional injuries that I went through. I almost lost my business as well, and I just went through a very dark time. And when I came to this point, the sort of aha moment about 6 months into my journey, into my healing, I realized that for me to truly heal, I had to get my faith back, and I started doing a lot of work on myself, just trying to build up love and compassion in my heart, because I felt this the resentment towards everybody. You know, it sort of became generalized. And what happens sometimes when you go through difficulty or adversity, it can trigger a lot of old wounds that you've had since the time you were, you know, a baby or whatever. They can get triggered because Sure. you're just in that state of mind. And so I worked very hard on just trying to build back love and compassion into my heart. And one of the things that I did was ask for a meeting with Kevin before we went to trial, before we were going to go to trial. Because I really wanted to meet him face to face. What they had submitted to the court was basically that he didn't remember the incident that had happened. He had tried LSD for the first time, and he had this break, the psychotic sort of episode from that was drug induced, but that he said he didn't remember, and that really infuriated me. I was like, how dare he not remember what he did to me? You know, poor me. And so, I wanted to meet him, and originally when I had asked for the meeting, I wanted to demand an apology. I wanted him to see all the pictures of the injuries that that he had caused, and that was original intent when I had asked for that meeting. But some time had passed, a couple months had passed, and when I was dry, and I had during that time done a lot of work on myself, and when I was driving over to that meeting, I remember just driving down the street, having this conversation with God, and in the conversation with him, I just said, you know, I surrender. Like, I don't know what the right thing is to do, you know, as far as all this is concerned. I don't know what's right. I don't know what, you know, anything anymore. Here, I surrender to you. Just let me see whatever it is I need to see. Let me hear what I need to hear. Show me what I need to do. And so when I actually walked into the meeting, I remember turning my eyes upward and saying to God, okay, you're on. And, when Kevin and his dad and his lawyer came into the room, I had this just incredible experience. It was as if all the anger and the angst and just all the difficulty of my life was just picked up and lifted from me. And all I felt was love. I mean, it was just this most, like, I just felt this connection with everything and everyone. And it was the most profound experience.
That's insane. Yeah. I mean, it just is. It's, man. And I, you know, listening to this whole thing, Kevin, I want to go back to you for a second. Listening to this whole thing, you know, I guess there is that feeling. Like, we all resonate with Mandy with the whole, really, you don't remember? Really, this was a one-off? Really, you were high on something? So I can't, definitely. What, I don't get to blame you now? Like, we all sort of relate to that.
Right.
So at the risk of being a jerk, let me ask you the questions I'm sure everybody else has asked. Really, you don't remember any of that night?
No, well, as time went on, after I met with Mandy, after I had time, after I've meditated on my own, things started to come back. At the time,
right.
It was very hazy. I didn't know. I was still dealing with school. I had to go back, and I would have to piece it together. Okay, this is where I went. I think I remember this. There was, because I was running. I was running, and then I decided to break into a window, so I was trying to piece it together. So as time came back and I read Mandy's book, all of these things and people's, all these interactions I have with people, I do now have a more connected, I think it's accurate description of what actually happened. And as I started to do that, I started to break down a little bit, and I started to feel that guilt and sense of selflessness and just sure guilt for what happened. So that was something that I had to deal with. And I told Mandy before making Kelly that, hey, I know, I remember a lot more than what I did now, and I want to share as much as I can. I just don't want you to resent me or anything like that. And Mandy was just like, Kevin, it is too late. We've been too far. It's over that. We are past that, and Mandy's just been great with that ever since.
Wow. I can't imagine you picking up her book and reading it. That's nuts.
Hardest thing I've ever done. Hardest thing I have ever done, Drew.
So I want to just give Kevin some kudos here because, you know, in my book, I did give him a different name because, you know, once I had made a decision that I wanted him to be forgiven, that I was advocating for the judge to withhold judgment so that he could serve out probation and, you know, be able to ultimately hopefully get his record wiped clean. I didn't want to then, you know, write a book and ruin his life because now, you know, he's out there. So,
I was going to say, you use his real name and then it's good luck with your dating life, Kevin.
Yeah, right. So I gave him a different name in the book. And but when we were invited on the Today Show to be interviewed by Megyn Kelly, he didn't need, I mean, there was no pressure on him to come to the show, but he chose to step forward. He chose to come forward and publicly admit, I'm the one, and you know, accept responsibility for what he did. And, you know, I think that's an important aspect of all this is that, you know, when somebody's willing to come forward to apologize, to say, to accept responsibility for what they did, it makes them a lot easier to forgive.
Well, and it also helps that Kevin's not a jerk. You know, he's not, I'm sure you are sometimes, Kevin, but for all intents and purposes, you're a pretty stinking nice guy. You've made all the right moves. You've got great hair, you know.
I try. I'm always trying to be a good person. All I wanted to do was help people. That's why I got into entertaining. You see my email, Keith the Geek. I want to be an entertainer. I want to make people laugh and smile. So me coming forward was like, this story is too God present to have it swept under the rug. You can't tell the full story if me, the element, is not in it and willing to share it. And it goes back to me being, I am not that person. So I need to tell my story and say, basically stand up for myself. Hey, this is who I am and what happened, and own up and take responsibility for it, which is the way I was raised. You take responsibility from your actions and you move forward in the most appropriate manner. So that's really why I had no qualms about coming forward on Megyn Kelly or any type of platform, because what happened happened and we have to move forward.
Kevin, who gave you the drugs? I mean, don't say their name, but it was like, actually, I don't even care. That's not even the question. The question is actually this. What contact did you have with them afterwards, and are you still in connection? Are you still connected with the person who gave you the drugs? And because I'm thinking that person who gave you the drugs, they certainly had no inkling that you were going to go off your nut and beat the living tar out of Mandy that day, right? So there's another dynamic in there as well. Like that person, I don't want to sound like a mushbag here, but I feel bad for that person too.
Yeah, well, everyone played their part. This was something that happened where it went from A to B and to C. But to give you an outline of it, there were friends. I won't say names or relations, but it was a group of friends that I was close to at school. And on November before, so this happened in February, November, I was asked if I would try this. And I said, no. And then eventually it was like, all right, fine. So I had this, I was gifted this LSD in November, and I waited November, December, January, and then February on Super Bowl weekend. I was like, you know what, just do this and whatever, you know. And I was taking a class called substance abuse at my school, and I was learning about it, and I learned, oh, Steve Jobs experimented with LSD. LSD was discovered by trying to find a cure for the common cold. So I was learning about it in a controlled environment. So I was always the type of person, you know, if you look at things logically and experimental nature and you're responsible with it, I was trying to approach it in the best possible manner if I were to try this, but no one could have told that it would have had that effect on me. I've never heard anything. And now after the fact, it's like I hear all these things about like MK Ultra and all these things that are going around LSD, all the suicides, all the craziness that's surrounded by this drug. So I had no no perception of what it was like before then. So I was kind of just, I won't say conned, but I was just unaware of how drastic this was.
Man, I'm old now. So, but I was just thinking, you know, you get to a certain age, you're like, oh, you know, maybe I should try the marijuana. You know, I don't know. I'm not thinking that because I get motion sick at everything. I can't drink too much. I can't take anything. I just get way too motion sick. So that I'm out. But, you know, a lot of people these days are like, it's becoming legal up here in Canada, right? And there's no correlation between LSD and pot. I'm not trying to make that correlation. But what I'm trying to say is the experimentation scenario that you willingly put yourself in must have scared a whole bunch of people straight. You tried LSD once and then beat the living tar out of somebody.
Right.
Just insane. I mean, you need to be that guy going around to schools, you know, just say no. You got to be the no guy.
Oh, yeah. I'm the spokesperson. You know, and one experience that really rings true to me. So when I was meeting with lawyers throughout the whole, in the thick of the situation through the case, I met with, I forget his role, but let's say a lawyer. And he said, you know, Kevin, there are a lot of things in the world, and when you die, you don't have to say you experienced all of them. It's okay to not experience things. You don't have to regret it, but you don't have to experience everything in the world because a lot is dangerous and you never know what can happen. So that's where I go, and that's how I kind of – it's a simple thought, but it's like, you know, I don't have to do this. I could be fine. I can go to the next world, or I can go to heaven or leave this world without trying a list of things. And if I was safe, happy, healthy, it's fine.
Okay. All right. Mandy and Kevin are on the line with us. We're in the middle of what we call our journey segment, Hope in the Midst of Mess. A website you want to check out is mind2succeed. That's T-O. So mind2succeed.com. That is Mandy's site. On February 7th, 2016, Mandy Bass suffered a brutal attack in her life when a college senior, Kevin, who's also on the line with us, broke into her home in a drug-induced rage and nearly beat her to death. You know what? I said to myself I wasn't going to do this, but if you guys have time, Mandy, how are you at recounting the events of that day? Would you rather not do that, or are you okay?
No, I'm very comfortable. I really have healed, I'm totally fine.
Right. Well, let me ask Kevin. As Mandy recounts these things, and you're sitting there listening, are you cool too, Kevin? I want to ask that.
Yeah, I'm fine. Mandy and I are both very, very fine with it.
Okay, what happened? Mandy, what happened?
If he read my book, he can.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, yeah. All right, so February 7th, let's start with what time in the day?
It was Super Bowl Sunday. It was in the afternoon, late in the afternoon, maybe around 4 o'clock, something like that, I think. And I was sitting at my desk trying to get some work done. It was the Super Bowl that night, and I wanted to watch both Bruno Mars and Beyonce were in the halftime show, and I wanted to watch them. But I had these deadlines, so I'm trying to get work done, and I hear glass breaking coming from the other side of the house. And first I figured my cat had knocked something over, but then the shattering continued, and I realized it must be something big. So when I eventually got up, I went across my living room, and I see this dark man coming out from the shadows. And he saw me, too, and came toward me. And we had this little exchange, and then next thing I know, his fist smashed my face, and I was hit to the ground. And I found myself drifting into unconsciousness, and the voice in my head was saying, get up, you've got to get out, or you're going to die here today, and no one's ever going to know what happened to you. At that point, Kevin was kicking me in the ribs, and he was ranting, do you believe in the forgiveness of Jesus Christ? And I didn't know what to think. I didn't know why he was asking those questions. I didn't know who he was or what he was doing in my house. I was completely confused. And the sort of beating went on for a little while. I tried to escape. But before I could get out the front door, he pulled me back. And when I swung around to face him, he had picked up this very heavy chair. and he was lunging toward me, aiming it at my head. I blocked with my right arm to protect my head, but the chair, but he came, continued to come forward, and the chair broke my arm. But the momentum sent him off balance, and I used it as an opportunity to get out the front door. When I started to rush out the front door, I knew that he was going to be right behind me. And so I was just looking at the house across the street, just trying to get, you know, trying to get there as fast as I could. Next thing I know, I get pulled to the side. And when I turn around, thinking I'm going to face Kevin, I'm in the arms of a police officer, a uniformed police officer. I had no idea what he was doing there. And then I look up and down the street, and the whole place is teeming with cops. And I was like, what are they doing there? How did they know? I knew that I didn't have time to call them. But I didn't really matter. I was just so grateful to be alive at that point, you know. And I got rushed off to hospital. In the meantime, a canine unit was sent in, and I guess Kevin can pick up the story from there.
Kevin?
Right. So my story obviously goes before I even entered Mandy's house. I had experimented with the drug, and my friends were there around me. And within 3 hours, this was about a 2-day cycle. This actually started on Saturday. We took the drug on Saturday, and about 3 hours into it, that's when I started freaking out. I started seeing things. I started saying, oh, I thought I needed to kill myself. I started having thoughts of suicide. I didn't know who I was. I didn't know I was in Earth. It was just a weird, weird experience, something I've never experienced before. So I went to sleep that night, woke up, and I was still affected by this. And all my friends who had taken it, they were not affected. And they were like, okay, what's wrong with Kevin? So eventually I find out that they called the police on me because they're worried. And a young black man in Florida, that I find out I'm on acid, and they tell me they're calling the cops. I was very scared. And that brought me, and I guess the best way to explain it, the more scared you are on it, the worse of the trip it's going to be, because you're extremely paranoid and then you have irrational thinking. So I'm on fire in my head. So I run outside of the house I'm staying at, out the back door, no shoes, whatever I'm wearing. I jump over fences. I climb on houses, just trying to get away because I see that the cops are there. So the cops are in pursuit of me. And I at this point, my logic I was thinking was, I need to get into a house before I get shot on the street, like someone that I see on Facebook every day.
Yeah.
So I open the door, just trying to seek refuge. So I'm in a house, and I see this man, and he's like, get out of my house. Stop. Guys, he's here. Cops, he's here. So I'm like a scared puppy at this point, just getting more and more scared as these encounters come. So I close the door, and I'm running. There's, okay, that won't work. Where do I go? So I think I'm like, they're probably behind me. Their guns might be drawn. I may be shot. So I need to get somewhere. So that's when I resort to breaking into Mandy's window. So I crawl in, and that's kind of where I have that interaction with Mandy, when I think, Mandy, what do you say? Get out of my house. And then I say, you get out of my house. And we go back and forth. And I'm thinking that Mandy is not a person. Mandy is some type of spiritual entity. She's a bad person. So I'm just fighting for my life, because I'm like, get out of this house. This is my house. Like, I need to be safe in here. So I'm assaulting and everything. And that's where I can see Mandy. I see the vulgar pictures of me on top of her. And it's just all just pain. And there's so much torture and just negative emotion that I don't know what was coursing through me. So eventually she leaves, and then that's when it calms down for me. So I'm up on 11 right now on a scale of 10. And then as there's no noise around me, as I'm in this house alone, I start to come back 9, 8, 7, 6. So I start to dial down, calm down. And then I start to kind of come back, and I'm like, oh my goodness. Oh no. Where am I? What is this? So that's when I'm like, oh, I'm going to die. And the police are outside. I can hear them come out the house right now. And I'm just like, I'm going to die right now. I'm going to die. I'm done. So what do I have to do? I have 30 seconds left to live, and I'm just kind of like accepted death, and you really don't know how you're going to react. So if somebody, oh, what would you do in this situation? You really don't know until it happens. So I was very calm about me dying, because I was thinking, if I hurt someone, I don't want to hurt anyone else. So maybe it is the best for me to just go. You know, it's, my time has been up here. I've hurt enough people. So I picked up a pen and said, don't use LSD. And I was kind of just pacing around, and that's when I had the thought, you know, I need to pray, because if I'm out right now, I want to make sure I'm going to a good place, and I just want to be on terms with the Creator. So I kneeled on my knees, put my hands behind my neck, and I said, I'm going to be still. I don't know what's going to happen to me. If I die, God, that's your doing. That's your choice. If I live, however, that will be an amazing surprise to me, because, frankly, I didn't think I deserved it at that point. And there's some divine nature there. So as soon as I kind of said that out loud, the German shepherds came in and caught me by the neck, and they kind of played with me like a ragdoll. And it was weird, because it was kind of an out-of-body experience, because, oh, man, just recapping it, because I was still, and I didn't have any pain, so I think the cops picked me up and I had to catch myself, but they thought I was dead. So that's about where they bring me out of the house, and they put me in the ambulance or the cop car, and that's where it goes on from there. I go to the hospital and I finally get it out of my system. I'm incarcerated for a number of days, and I'm still on the effect. I know I was still affected by this drug mm-hmm. when I was in jail before I was bailed out. And the way I kind of came to is I was doing like push-ups and drinking the water to get it kind of run through my system. So this was a like 3-day thing I was just on.
Guess I'm supposed to say something. yeah. And then at some point in your story, as you're sharing this story, I could just imagine Kevin saying, and then yada, yada, yada. Now we're friends, you know?
Yeah.
It's just weird. Yeah, it's just weird. Okay, hold on. Kevin, were you punished for your crimes?
I believe I was. I'm still on probation, as I think, but it is a slap on the wrist compared to what could have been.
So what did they end up giving you, I guess, is the term? I'm speaking prison hood language here, like I know what I'm talking about. What did you end up serving, or what were the consequences, Kevin?
What is my penance?
Yep.
Okay, well, because of Mandy, I was going to have about 25 to life, and then they wanted to put me on house arrest. But after I met with Mandy, she tried her hardest to reach out to the prosecutor in the state, and I was sentenced with 5 years probation, where I have 200 hours of community service. I am not to engage in any contact with the police, cannot do any type of illegal substance, and cannot drink alcohol.
You're not to engage with any contact in the police? I don't understand that part.
Well, if I get like a parking ticket, or if I'm pulled over with somebody and they have a gun in the car,
oh, I see.
I can't have any type of contact with
them. Okay, got it. So stay away from people that are going to cause you trouble.
Right.
And drive slow. Okay. And Mandy, you were really, really, you got to a point where you're totally okay with that. Because there are people in the community, there are outsiders that are looking in on your case, and they don't know the whole thing. And even just the cops, they'd be like, oh, yeah, it's your first time. Yeah, sure, we've heard that before. Oh, you're a good kid. Yeah, we've heard that before. And Mandy, you know, I'm sure you must have had people in your ear going, no, don't, why are you doing this? Why are you being so nice about that? You're being naive. Any of that stuff, Mandy?
Yeah, so, you know, even up till that day, I was thinking that there needed to be some kind of term served or something.
Yep.
When I basically surrendered to God on my way over to the meeting, I asked for guidance about what to do. And so never in this process since that time did I worry about what was the right decision or what was the right thing. I just allowed myself to be guided as to what was the right thing for Kevin in this situation, which doesn't mean that I'm making a pronouncement about, you know, crime or about anything else other than I feel really strongly that I've been guided, that this is what needed to happen in this particular situation.
Incredible stuff. Okay, final question, and I don't even know how to word this, and I'm probably just going to put my foot in my mouth. That's one of my spiritual gifts. Mandy, I've been listening to your voice. South African?
Yes.
You guys have not had the best race relations down there, and here comes a black man smashing through your window and attacking you. Any weirdness
in
that?
In my book, yeah, so in my book, Taming the Tokolosh, and by the way, Tokolosh, for people who don't know what that is, it's in South Africa, it's a South African mythical creature, like an evil spirit, and I use it as a symbol for irrational fear. So that is, I try to sort of weave that culture. I think it's a lot to do with, I mean, there's a part of me that feels that somehow this was like an ordained experience where, you know, I did feel previously like I bore some of the responsibility of our society. And, you know, I've always felt really a lot of shame around growing up as a white person in South Africa. And, you know, I did, you know, I have had moments of insight into that whole idea, and I really feel blessed and honored to have come to a place of healing. I don't, you know, I personally don't feel the racial divides that some people may on either side, but I feel so blessed in this experience, and I think Kevin does too, that somehow our ability to be able to let whatever all the divides between us go and do our best to just try to come to our lives in a way that is, that projects love and understanding and compassion. I feel blessed that's something I've been able to do, and I feel like maybe the fact that I do come from South Africa, that is a part of it, and I feel honored to be able to play that role.
Incredible story, man, and timely. I mean, the weirdness surrounding the timing of this story with the race stuff that's going on in your country in particular.
Yeah.
And the beautiful, authentic healing that's come out of your story. Oh, man. It's like the timing is just incredible. And I know I'm not one that sit there and go, I don't think I'll ever get to a point where I'll go, oh, well, God wanted this to happen. You know, God wanted Kevin to go off his face on drugs and beat the snot out of me. No, and I'm not buying into that. But I know that God is the ultimate lemonade maker. How about that?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm not saying, and I didn't mean it to sound like, oh, God, made this happen. But given that it did, this is like the best. There could have been so many different ways that this could have ended. You know, Kevin could have broken into a different house. He could have, you know, there's so many different ways that this could have turned out. And as it is, you know, I feel really blessed. And I think Kevin does too. And we've both been through a lot and a lot of hardship from this, even though, you know, yeah, he's gotten off pretty easily as far as a prison term, but you know, he's also, you know, he's had to endure you know, a rough time, and you know, this is something that will always be a part of his life now, and we can make it into something good, or we can or it can be a something of shame and fear. Yeah. And so we've both chosen, you know, the other way, and so of that I'm very proud.
Thank you to both of you. Mandy, Kevin, thank you so much for spending so long with us today on the show. And I wish you guys the best in the future, obviously. Thank you, Mandy. Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you so
thank
much.
You. Yeah, bye-bye.